I am happy to introduce our one and only speaker, Chris H.
All right, I'll try and keep this brief. All right, thank you. All right, thank you, Christopher, alcoholic. Very much appreciate you asking me to do this. I brought my witness and her dad to keep me honest, to make sure that I tell the story correctly. I didn't grow up with my childhood was terrible. My childhood was great. I had a mom and a dad that loved me. My dad was alcoholic, but he hid it well, or at least I had no idea that he was at the time. But I grew up in a very loving family. They made sure everything got done. All of my homework was always done. I was never hungry. I was actually overweight. I always just felt like I didn't quite fit in. And so I would go from group to group, and whoever would hang out with me, I would hang out with them. And if that person wasn't at school, I kind of felt lonely. And so that continued forever. I always got good grades. I felt like I had to get good grades, prove myself to be who I was and what I was doing. But it was all my parents made sure that everything was done homework wise. And it was just kind of like, here, do your homework, here, do your homework, here, do your homework. And so I never really had that responsibility. It was always forced upon me. All the way through high school, I would hang out with people, and it would be whatever crowd I was in, I would morph personalities to fit that grouping. And it was like, if I hung out with the jocks, all of a sudden it was like, okay, we're over in the football squad. Okay, cool. Okay, we're going to go hang out with the gangsters. Okay, now we're cool with the gangster people. And then it was like, oh, we're going to go hang out with the smart people. Okay, now we're in the smart group. But it was always whatever it was, I was trying to fit into their groups. And changed my personality based on that. So I never really figured out who I was until I got here. And then when I did kind of start figuring it out, I covered it up more with alcohol. The earliest time I remember drinking, it was in high school, and I played at Santa Maria High School, so we never won. So it was the one time, it was one of the one times we won the football game. And so the group of us went to Presker Park, and it was just the football team, and they went and they got the alcohol out. They started cooking, started barbecuing, and they got the ice chest out, and they said, here, drink this. And it was like, I didn't want to not be a part of the team, so I went right along with it. I think I was 16, maybe 17, and they just kept passing them my direction. And so me and another guy were seeing who could drink the most there, and he was messed up. I was messed up. I called my ex-girlfriend, that was my girlfriend at the time, and I just so happened to have a car that had a stick shift, and nobody knew how to drive a stick shift. And so they had to wait till I was sober enough to drive, and they drove behind me, and we went to her house, and I passed out on the couch and woke up and like, oh, I'm not doing that again. I'm never doing that again. Oh my God. And then senior year in high school, I had a class at Hancock, and so they would let us go out, and one of my buddies right across the street here also graduated early, so we would just go to his house during lunchtime, and we would just get they would get shit-faced, and I couldn't stand the taste of beer, so I would smoke weed while they drank. And I can remember being super high and going to calculus and not knowing what the heck they were talking about, but I could pass the test. And it was difficult because I was high and didn't understand. And then on top of that, the teacher had a very, I think she was from Slovenia. And so she had a very thick accent, so I couldn't understand what she was saying anyway. But I ended up passing that class and doing okay. But it was a struggle. And midway through that, they got me onto Sparks. And so it was a kind of a fruity beer, and it would mess me up enough, but it had the caffeine in it, so I could keep going. And I'm like, oh, this is awesome. And then I thought it was very strange that my buddy would say, oh, on Sundays we don't drink. And like, we just lay off on Sundays, and you know, that's the Lord's Day, so we don't drink. And I'm like, why? and so I was just like, well, I do. So I didn't take the days off. He would take days off. And I can remember we would stand in the backyard, and one of my buddies got in trouble at school for being too drunk and passed out, and campus security brought him in. And so he had to start going here. So we would make fun of him for having to go across the street when we were all drinking over there, and he'd come over here. And we'd stand in the back and go, yeah, alcoholics for life. And little did I know, yeah, I'd be an alcoholic for life, and here I am. so, funny joke on me. But let's see, where are we? At that point, I was drinking every day, I got a job finally, and I could support my drinking and smoking habits, so it's like all of my money went directly to there. And then little to find out, my boss at the time, who was the wife of the owner of the restaurant, she was secretly getting high, and I was secretly getting high, and then we found out we were both getting high, so we got high together. And she's like, don't tell my husband. And it's like, okay, don't tell anybody else, and we'll be fine. And so that was my first job, and I had that job for quite a while. She did not, but I got my first Wet Reckless when I was 20, and I remember it vividly. I was going to San Luis right before I left. My mom said, you know, I got a funny feeling, don't be drinking tonight. And I'm like, okay, I won't. And immediately I was. And the cop pulled me over in Arroyo Grande and said I didn't stop at the stop sign, but I had stopped so far back that he didn't see me stop at the stop sign, and I just went. And so he pulled me over, and that I consistently have a habit of not telling the truth when asked the first time. And so when he asked me, he's like, have you been drinking? I was like, oh, no, of course not. And he's like, oh, okay, how old are you? And started running my number, and he's like, well, you know, I can smell the alcohol on you, and like, you already lied to me once, so I'm not going to tell you. And so then I was honest with him, and he's like, yeah, I don't believe you. And so I'm like, but I'm telling the truth. And he's like, yeah, but you didn't tell the truth first. And so, I mean, that was hard. I had to call my mom after she had told me not to do it in the middle of the night and have her come pick me up. And I told her, oh, I'm not going to work tomorrow. And she's like, the hell you're not. Like, I had to come. I got to go to work. It's the middle of the night. I got to go to work in the morning. I can't call out. You're going. And so that was my first, like, okay, I better stop. So, at that point in time, I got my car taken away. I got all kinds of fines. I got to go to spend a little bit in jail. But it was just like a night in jail, and that was it. And so then I just rode my bike everywhere because I was afraid of getting another DUI. And at the time, my dad was attending meetings, so he took me to the old Alano Club over on Bent. Well, first he took me to the airport meeting, and him and I sat way in the back, and little did we know that they just went all the way along everyone and made everybody share at that meeting. And so my dad had to share, and he wasn't used to sharing in front of me, and so he was freaked out to share in front of me, and then I didn't know what to say, so we were both just like, and so he shared a little bit, and then afterwards he's like, I feel really strange sharing in front of you, and it freaks me out. And so we stuck around for a while. I started going to the Ben Wiley meeting at the Alano Club when it was over in the barracks, and they actually had the little bar set up, and you could spend time and hang out. And so I got about 6 months. I was working with the sponsor. The secretary on the Tuesday meeting left, and so I got voted in, and I was so proud, and I was so excited, and then I started smoking weed, and I thought, okay, well, they say, are you sober? And I could say, yeah, I'm sober, but not clean, and so I wouldn't go to the NA meetings. I would just say, hey, yeah, I'm sober. And so I was like, okay, cool. I'm skirting around this. And then my dad found out, made me tell my sponsor, and they told me I had to start my time over again. And I had like 9 months. I'm like, nah, screw that. I'm out. And I was just like, I'm not going back in there, and I'm not raising my hand. And I refused to come back in and raise my hand because I didn't want to do the 30 days of introducing myself as a newcomer. And so I was just like, okay, I'm out. Gone. And so at that point, I lost the secretary position, all that kind of stuff. And at the time, I switched from Hancock to Cal Poly. I was going to school, but I would go to school and drink and then fail, and then go to school and drink and fail. And so I repeated this pattern over and over and over and over. And at one point, they made me go back to Hancock to prove that I could be coherent. And but prior to that, I met this lovely lady here and drug her along for all this time through all of those fun things. So, but she was unaware for probably like about a year that I was alcoholic, and I just didn't say anything. She knew I drank and smoked a little bit, but no big deal. And then one time we were going to go to, I think we were going to the grad in San Luis. And she's like, oh, you guys, you could be the DD. The three of us are going to be gonna go party. And I'm like, okay, cool. And so I was drinking right before all of them got into the car, and I was supposed to be the sober one. And we made it out of the little Arroyo Grande parking lot that there's an exit now, and got onto the freeway and got pulled over immediately. And then all of them were like, what the heck are we doing here? Why are we, what is going on? Why are we getting pulled over? And why are you drunk and driving the car? And then the police officer was talking to me, and he's like, the three of you aren't driving the car are not drunk, and the guy driving the car is drunk. What happened? And they're like, we had no idea until he got in the car and started driving. And at that point, I got to my first actual DUI, and then they just carried on and went to the club without me, and I went to jail. And so thinking about it, I think I probably would have preferred jail, because I would have heard about it all night from all of them, that what the heck. And so I missed that at least. So it was quiet in jail. But at that point, it really started spiraling and getting worse and worse and worse and worse. At that point, more pills and such were starting to circle at the restaurant that I worked at. So I started doing that because everybody else was. And because I had gone back to Hancock, and they said I needed to take classes that I could pass, I took a class that it was, I forget what it was called, but it was basically like an Alcoholics Anonymous class, where it was like they teach you about delirium tremens, they teach you about withdrawals, all that kind of stuff. And so it's like, I know all about those. I could pass this class. So I got flying colors in that class. But then in the evenings, when I was around, I would drink, and I was taking pills at the time, and I passed out in one of the bathrooms at Hancock, and it was probably like 8 o'clock at night, and just was out. And it just so happened that when I first got shot, my buddy that was one of the campus policemen, so I knew him from junior high and elementary school, and so he's the one. And so first the janitor found me, and then he called my buddy called her and said, hey, can you come get him? I don't want to call the cops. Like, can you come? If you can come get him, I won't call the cops. And so he handed me off to her, and she's like, oh my God, what the hell? I'm so embarrassed. And I was embarrassed. And then I could clean up for about 3 months and do well, pretend everything was okay, and just white knuckle it. But then something would happen, and I would just start drinking again and not tell anyone. And then she would find out a couple weeks later, maybe a couple months later. And then it's like, when did this start happening again? Oh my God. And so I didn't really stop after that too much. I stopped for about 3 months after that, and then I started going again. And it was somebody's birthday party in her family, and we were at their house, and they were taking shots, and I would sneak in shots in between the shots that everybody else was taking while they were in the other room. Yeah, she's finding stuff out right now. Look at her. And so I kept saying, I was telling everybody, like, I had a little soccer ball, and I kept saying, does anybody want to play soccer with me? I want to play soccer. Let's go play soccer. And they all wanted to go watch, I think it was football or something. And so nobody wanted to play soccer with me. So I was out in the backyard and playing a little bit. And then all of a sudden I was just gone. And I don't know, how long did you search for me? Like two hours or so. And nobody knew where I had gone, where I was. And I had taken the soccer ball and gone to the park, and I was passed out on the bench with the soccer ball. And they found me in the middle of the night, and it was probably about midnight or so, and they drove me back to the house. And then I can remember, and we pulled up to the house, and I was like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, open the door. I opened the door and threw up. And then the next morning, I remember Daniel here came and got me and was like, you need to clean up your mess right there. And so, yeah, that's when all the rest of her family found out that I had a problem. And then at that point, and so as I was progressing through my disease, the more and more drugs kept coming through the restaurant I worked at. So at that point, we started passing around cocaine, and so people were selling that. And so it went from smoking weed to drink, smoking weed and drinking to doing pills, and then I stopped doing that. And then once I stopped doing that, it's like, well, if I do cocaine, I can drink a lot more. And so I figured out that I could stay up and drink a lot more if I started doing that. And so that's really where things got worse. Eventually I stopped doing all of that long enough to get a new job. And I started working in the field that I was going to school for. And I started doing pesticide residue testing, and we all kind of had a fun time at work. I found a new connect at that worked, and started doing worse things. One afternoon, somewhere in there, I got a second DUI. I don't remember exactly when, but I got another DUI in there. I had to go to jail. Didn't tell anybody about it. Just I went to jail. Nobody knew where I was. I went the next day to Rio Grande, picked up my car, and just continued on like nothing happened. Went to work, and then a little bit after that, I had drank too much at work. We were having a barbecue. They put me in charge and said, okay, go for it. The first time they put me in charge, I had drank too much and passed out in the bathroom at work. The manager came and got me and took me home. I walked all the way back to work and picked up my car and left because I didn't want my mom knowing I was in trouble. I came back and got suspended for 2 weeks. And I was just like, okay, well, 2 weeks with no pay, that's not that big a deal. I told them that I had fallen off the wagon and kind of gave them the sob story of, yeah, I'm alcoholic. I know I'm alcoholic. Like, this is just a step along the way. Oops. And so they're like, the only reason you still have a job is because you said you fell off the wagon. Go back to the program. If you ever smell like alcohol again, don't even bother coming to work. And I was like, okay, cool. And so about a week into my suspension, I can remember I went to, I went south and I went to one of the beaches down there, and then I came back north and I went to the Guadalupe beach. I went to Point Sal and I was out there drinking for a while, and I remember I could hike as far as half of my beers were gone, and then I would hike back because I could drink half of them there and half of them back, and that was how far I could hike. And so I made it all the way there and I made it all the way back. I made it back to the car, and I can recall I was supposed to go to my sister's birthday party at the time, and I never made it. I remember going out of Point Sal, and that was about as much as I remember. The next thing I remember was sitting in the front seat of a police car, and they're like, oh, that's a fourth DUI. And I was like, what are you talking about? I've only got three. And he's like, no, you've got, they're counting the wet reckless. Once you get into three and a wet reckless, that third one is a felony, and it's a fourth DUI. And I was like, no, that's not right. And then I woke up the next, I don't remember anything after that except for waking up in the holding cell in Orchid. They had next to the juvenile hall, they had a little holding cell. And I was just like, oh man, I'm in trouble. And I remember waking up and there was a guy on the top bunk. And then they took me into the other room. They had me call my mom and said, hey, I told them who she was and everything, and I thought, okay, cool, they're gonna release me and let me go again, cool, I'll go back to doing what I was doing. And then they handcuffed me to the other guy and they put me in the van, and we went to Santa Barbara County, and I'm like, yeah, how am I gonna get home? And they're like, oh, you're not going home. Like, no, we're not going home. And so at that point, I got to spend a month. It was about 2.5 months fighting it, and then about a month after I had gotten sentenced. But just before that, when I in the middle of that, I can remember my grandma passed away in June, and I gotten in trouble in October. And right in between there, I can remember just missing her, and I went and parked outside of her house, but there was also a crack house right across the street from her house. So I was sitting outside of her house, and the police like always patrol that area, and I wasn't thinking about it, but I was a little tired, and I had some drugs with me, and I was still drinking, and I had leaned back in the car, and I was just taking a little nap, and the light goes over the top of the car, and a policeman went by and went over the top of the car and like checked if anybody was in the car. And I was just thinking, oh my god, if I would have been sitting upright, I would have been going to jail and more felon and all this fun stuff. And I'm just like, oh my god, second god shot. And I can just remember, like, at that point I think my grandma was looking over and was just like, oh, I've had enough of this crap. Like, you're done. And that was when I got my next DUI and I got to go to jail and spend some time there. So I ended up spending 3 months in jail fighting it. They wanted to give me a felony. The lawyer I had said, no, we're not going to handle that. Like, we're going to fight it as much as possible. And so they ended up, after 3 months, they dropped it down and they gave me a misdemeanor, and I got probation for, they said 3 years, but it ended up being a year total. And then they gave me 6 months in a sober home and 6 months in jail. So I had almost done my time in jail with good time, time and a half, and they gave me 10 days credit or something. So I spent another little bit, and right before New Year's they let me out, and I can remember walking down the street from Santa Barbara, and my dad said he'd pick me up, and I had a little commissary money, and the first thing I did was walk down the street, and they have a liquor store down the street, which is like, I was like, nope. And so I turned right back around the other way, and it turned out I went back in, and they had let me out a different door, and I missed my dad. So my dad had been sitting there the whole time, so it was kind of like that first test of, okay, you've been in jail for 3 months, and you haven't done anything, but first temptation, are you going to go and do it? Like, I was just like, dude, everybody would be so disappointed, I can't do that. So I went back, I found my dad, we went back to the house, it was nice to be back in the normal house, and so about a month after that, they required me to go to the sober house, so I was like, okay, cool, and it was the first time I was going, so I was like, how do you go and find something like that? And my dad found one, and it was like, this is the one you're going to, I'm going to take you, you can go and interview, I'll go sit with you in the interview, let's go. And so we went, and we met Rick from Pathways, and he was newly sober and newly in charge of the house. And I was like, he was asking me my story and how long you've been sober and what you've been doing and what's the situation. So he's like, well, we don't have a room right now at this Pathways, but we got one on the other one. And I was like, well, it doesn't have to be today, and it could be tomorrow. And he's like, oh, it could be tomorrow. Okay, we'll have a bed here tomorrow and Pathways too. We'll get it ready. Okay, and so my dad brought me back the next day, and like I can remember sitting there on the couch and didn't want to change the channel on the TV. Felt very uncomfortable. I'd never been away from my mom's house except for in jail, and that was a whole different story. And so I was just like not comfortable at all. And Rick was like, hey, you know, you can change the channel, right? And they were watching Cops, which was always on. I swear, it was always on. And I was just like, no, this is good. And so I was watching Cops, which she wouldn't let us watch Cops at the house because she says it feels a little ghetto. But I can understand that. I don't want to relive a lot of that too. But the police kept checking in, making sure everything was going good. It was just one of those things where it's like everything kind of lined up the way it was supposed to. And it's like, yeah, I lost a job, but another job came up. And so I started working doing a little bit of research trials in strawberries, which I had been locked inside for such a long time that it was like there was no windows, there was no doors, it was this dark room, you didn't know what time it was, you were just there. And when I got outside, it's like you could smell the sulfur from the strawberries, you could smell the strawberries, you could feel the wind. It's like, oh, this is for me. And so that was when I really fell in love with being outside and being in agriculture. And so at that time, I started going back to school while I was doing some research, and it was one of those things where it's like school, research, and sobriety all at the same time. And I didn't have class on Fridays, and I didn't have work on Fridays, so I started secretarying the Friday noon meetings, and they let me do it when I had like 4.5 months sobriety, and 6 is usually when they let you do it. So, but nobody else would do it, so it was kind of like, here, you do it. And so I did it for about a year. I did a little bit of painting with Keith to make a little bit of money. Like, it was all just sobriety related stuff. So I had to start out again at Hancock and prove to Cal Poly that I was coherent. So I did that. Went back to Cal Poly, when I went back to talk to the Cal Poly counselor, they're like, is this the first time you're seeing the counselor? I was like, yeah. And she's like, you know, your GPA is like a 1.3, right? And I was like, yeah, I know. And And she's like, you know, that'll take like 2 years to get, like, you're going to have to get all B's and do that for 2 years to get your GPA like normal. And I was like, okay. And so I figured, okay, let's do this. I started taking classes. I got back in and I got straight A's the whole time I was there. I did two summer courses and a fall course, and I got straight A's, and it was enough to bring me up to a 2.13. So I was able to get out of there. But while I was at the sober house, it was definitely one of those things where I knew I had a safe place to go. Rick ran that place like an iron safe. Like, you couldn't get away with anything. And that was his favorite thing, was busting people and waking people up at 7 o'clock in the morning. If anybody slept past seven, he would like sit there with the watch and he'd be like, 7 o'clock, all right. And he'd run up the stairs and knock out on everybody's door and wake them up. And I can remember that. But the biggest thing I can remember is there was numerous times where things weren't going my way. I couldn't handle the emotional roller coaster, and so I ride my bike and just zoom back to the sober house. And once I was there, it was just like, okay, it's safe. Nobody can bring stuff in here. It's just like, I mean, if she can't get in there, like, it didn't matter. Like, that was a safe spot to go. And so that... after 6 months of being in the sober house, I completed that program. I was still on probation, but I was able to complete a bachelor's in biochemistry from Cal Poly at that time. And at that point, I was talking to the probation officer, and she's like, "You're going to school for what? And you're here?" And it's like, "Yeah, well, it happens." And it's like smart in some aspects and stupid in others. After that, I started sponsoring somebody, and we started working back through the steps, and it kept me centered and kept me in the steps. And he didn't stay sober, but it kept me going. And that happened a couple different times where I'd start working with somebody, we'd start going down it. I'd start reading the book because I had to be a step ahead of them to make sure that I remembered everything to say. And then it would keep me in the book, but then they would fall off or they'd switch sponsors or something. And I mean, it's all good. It kept me sober. Let's see. It was like, they talk about two different types of spiritual experiences in the book. One's the sudden one and one's the educational variety. And I definitely had the educational variety where I was not a religious person at all. So talking about higher power and God and all this stuff was foreign to me and uncomfortable. And I still can't talk religion without being a little bit uncomfortable, but I can talk spirituality and God and higher power without having a problem. But it really was like I could see that my things were lining up and it wasn't in my control. I thought I had gotten this job. It was exciting. They were going to pay me more than my current job, almost double. And I'm like, all right, yes, I have arrived. The job fell through. And so I already told one job, and I had to go back and tell them, oh, I'm not actually leaving. Hold on. And so then they were just like, oh, okay, you're going to up and leave us one day. And so I didn't get that job. And then another job at the place I was working at for a higher management position came up. And I'm like, okay, cool. I'm qualified for all these things. And I can remember being so angry somebody else got the job, and she was incompetent in my eyes. It was working, testing wine and juices to see the alcohol content and if the fermentation was done in the wine. And so it was a very dangerous place for somebody early on in sobriety to be. But I had told them, look, I don't drink, I don't anything. And so part of the job of being the management was going out and having wine with all these people. And it's like, well, that wouldn't have been a good spot anyway. And then, so I was at that job, that fell through. And then I had gotten the second DUI at the time, and I had never dealt with it because I lived in Santa Barbara County, and that was San Luis County. And so I was just like, okay, I'll deal with that someday. And about 2 years into sobriety, I figured I better go and fix that because they're never going to give me my license back if I don't. And so I talked to my sponsor about it. I talked to several different people about it. And so I went to the judge in San Luis and told him, look, I took a day off of work. I can't go to jail today, but I'd like to figure out how I can go and serve my time so that I can get this off my record. And they're like, I could put you in jail right this second. And like, you know that, right? And I'm like, all right, like, whatever. And he's like, okay, come back and surrender yourself next week. Get your stuff in order. I'm going to give you an extra 10 days for not paying attention to any of the warnings we sent you. And so they gave me, so I went to San Luis County, and I can remember being at, it was, I think it was when we were above the thrift store at the Alano Club. And I shared that tomorrow I'm going to jail, and oh man. And I can remember somebody being like, oh, have fun. And I held the resentment against that person for like ever. And then I was just like, you know, they got it worse than I do. And I could see, I still see them sometimes, and like they didn't get it, and you can see them just kind of falling apart. And so it's like, I can see that they weren't quite in the right headspace. So it's like, it wasn't fair to me to, or fair, wasn't fair for me to be judging them. So it was one of those things that I saw that later on. But so I went and spent 35 days in San Luis County, and I went almost directly to the farm. And they're like, okay, get to work. And in Santa Barbara County, they give you like 2 days off, and you don't got to go to work, and you don't do anything. And then I found out in San Luis County that like your day off from your regular job, you go and work somewhere else in one of the other facilities. So it's like I was in the kitchen, and they sent me on my day off to go work in the laundry. And I'm like, what kind of shit is this for a day off? But you know, the time did go by really fast, and I found a couple people in there that to talk to, and they were trying to pull their head out of their butt too. And so I got to talk some sobriety with them, and you know, you could be doing this and you could be doing that. And I saw, I don't know if they're sober, but one of the guys I was talking to, he's a firefighter now in San Luis, and it's just like, cool, you pulled your head out, man. But I think the worst part of that was, when I was in jail, I kept telling the officer, dude, I'm 2 years sober. And he'd be like, well, then what are you doing here? And it's like, I'm serving the time from when I did get in trouble, and I'm talking like I'm coherent. I am not drunk. Like, and he kept commenting that the whole time I was there, what are you doing here if you're not in trouble? It's like, I was in trouble. I pulled my head out. I'm serving my time. And he's just like, And so it was just like, all right, fine. But I got through that. I got all done with that. And then after I got done and that job let me go through all of that, I found a job that was an actual big boy job that is, it was working as a lab supervisor and for the soil lab. And so the person, it was, again, like another God shot. Things are lining up. So the lady that was there was retiring shortly. And so I learned everything that she had to teach me for about a year, and then we swapped positions. So I was the assistant, she was the supervisor, and then we switched about 8 months through, and then she slowly retired off that. And so she taught me everything she knew without restraint, taught me everything. And then about 2 years into working there, I decided, you know, I can't catch on to how nitrogen's working in the soil, and how is it working in organics. And nobody could answer my questions, so I decided to go and get a master's at Cal Poly. And the professor that I decided to work with, she's just like, hey, okay, what research project do you propose? What do you think? And so they allowed me to go to school while I was working. It worked out. I mean, COVID was not good, but it worked out for me because I could do online classes from work, and I could work at the same time. So I was watching the class on the computer and working in the background on all of the machines that were running behind it. And so I would turn the camera on, answer the question, go back to doing what I was doing, fixing the machine. So COVID worked out really nicely when I was having to go to school to get my master's, except for the last quarter we actually had to go in person. But let's see. That was 2022. I ended up finishing that up. I was about 5 years sober. And it was the strangest thing because I got through all of that whole program and then I realized how little I knew about nitrogen organic management and agriculture and all this stuff. So I was just like, well, I'm already in the study mode. I'm going to go get a PhD. And so I applied to UC Davis and got in. But I can remember sitting at the graduation at Cal Poly, and I was the first one that got called and the first one off the stage. And I went and found her, and I found her dad and her friends and my mom and dad. And like, I could just remember thinking, like, that was very unfulfilling to be done with that. It was like the everything leading up to it was like, oh my gosh, I got to do this, I got to do that, I got to do this. And then once I had done it, it was kind of like, And I find that where the chase is more exciting than actually doing it. And I had that with smoking and drinking and stuff. They like chasing it was more exciting than actually doing it. I felt like shit while I was doing it, but I would like going and finding it and like the trouble I could get in, like all the little rituals and all that kind of stuff. It was just like, this is cool. And then it was the same thing where it's like, once I got to that, it was just like, I had to go live in Davis for a year, which I had to be away from her, and work allowed me to go and stay up there for a while. And so I got to be an actual college student rather than just somebody who was trying to finish things while they were keeping a job to fund their drinking habit. And so at that point, I was going to UC Davis, but I'd come back on the weekends, and I was secretarying the 1600 on Sunday morning. And I kept that position so that I had to come back and I had to be here and make sure that like all the things that sobriety had given me wasn't lost. I kept hearing the first thing you lose when you lose your sobriety, and then you lose everything else that matters to you. And so it's like, you got to keep the sobriety in the forefront. And since then, I've always switched back and forth with Jim every year. Me and him switch, because nobody else seems to want to take that one on a Sunday morning. But Mr. Happy Joyce and Free himself and I switched that off. During the past 3.5 years, I've been going back and forth to Cal Poly and figuring stuff out. And I kept thinking, like, I would get frustrated and something would happen. And it was like, once I got past that, it was just like, oh man, okay. God hasn't dropped me yet. Oh, my higher power hasn't dropped me yet. Like, as it says, I had the spiritual experience of the educational variety, and my higher power had brought me, I had to learn how to trust and that everything would be okay no matter what. And so it was that, just getting back to that sober house at first, and that was okay because everything was okay once I got there. And then it was kind of like, it's okay not to have that first job because that first job wasn't it. I could have been stuck there, and this other job was available right after I missed out on that first one. And I spent all that time there. They have allowed me to go to school. They've allowed me to get everything I need to get done. in order to be where I am now. And so it's like all those little trials and tribulations have tested, like, oh my gosh, am I going to be okay? Am I going to be okay? And so I can get wrapped up in my head, or I can be way too relaxed about everything. But she keeps me on top of everything. She makes sure to fact check. And also, like, coming in here, I had to do the fifth step and the ninth step, and those were difficult. But I feel like it's one thing to tell your sponsor something and not have it come out, but she's not afraid to tell me something that she knows is going to hurt my feeling, but it'll help me grow. And so she it's just like I get held to a higher standard than just like, oh, just leave me alone, oh, just get off my back. And it's like, no, this is good for your own sake. Here, I'm going to tell you to do these things, I'm going to help you out with this. Don't do this, do this, dress nicer. And so it really was just like leveling up in sobriety and becoming a normal human being. And my parents did a great job raising me, but that growing into a normal human being and being a productive individual, I don't know that that would have come if it wasn't for her and her dad. So it was very much like, here, go get a regular job. Here, go be a productive human being. And over the past 3.5 years, I've been going to school at Davis. And a week ago, or 2 weeks ago, I turned in all my paperwork. And then on the 5th, they granted me my degree. And then the 12th, they actually posted it and published it. And so I can call myself doctor, which I think that's pretty cool. So, thank you. It was really one of those things that it's like, I don't know how I would have done it if it wasn't for everybody in this room. Like driving back and forth to Davis, it was a mix of music and podcasts, audiobooks, and the Big Book. That is like, it was a 5.5 hour drive sometimes, and it was just like you switch it up. And sometimes I would be so wound up, and it's just like serenity prayer, serenity prayer, serenity prayer, serenity prayer. And now in the mornings, I just one of the members says, if you stay in the basics, you don't got to go back to the basics. So I try and remember every morning, wake up before you roll out of bed, pray, ask my higher power to direct my thinking, get me out of my own way, selfishness, self-seeking, and self-pity, and remove me from that, and help me make the right decision that's the best decision for me and for everyone around me. Or even if it's not the best decision for me, the best decision overall. A few weeks back, just to like shake things up, one of the presidents of one of the biggest farming companies came and was like, we want to hire you, we want to move you to Bakersfield, like, let's figure this out. And so I was just like, there's no way you could pull me away from my job, like, there's no way. And so we went down, we looked at Bakersfield, and we figured it out. And it's like, I had to examine my motives, because my first thought is, yeah, they're going to pay me more, hell yeah. And then it was like, am I looking at money, property, and prestige, and is that driving my thought, or is it education, is it like opportunities, or is it like I can do the greatest good for others by taking this position? So I really had to sit there and do some thinking, and I am going to take that position, but I'll be here on weekends. But it was really one of those things that it was like, I had to make sure I was making that right decision for the good of my family, for the good of me, for my sanity, and some of it does come down to, am I going to be able to pay the bills? Am I going to be able to support family in the future? Can we get a nice house? Can we get a nice car? Can we, all that kind of stuff. And this provided that opportunity, and I had to sit through the other day. So all the people at my current work supported me through all of this, and I do feel close to them, and I told them that I'm taking this other position. They countered, and they feel it feels very cold from them right now, and so that really hurts. But I'm like, I'm gonna stay there for another month and make sure that the ship is righted, because it's the right thing to do. And it's like, you know, it is hard, and so it's one of those things where it's like, at this point, it does hurt my feelings, but it's not about me. It's about making things right, so I'm a big boy. I can figure it out. We are going to do that, but it is one of those things where it's like, I had to examine my motives. I had to talk to my higher power. I had to talk to my friends and family. I had to make sure work was going to be okay. And, through all of that, drinking was not ever on the forefront of my mind of a solution for, like, oh my God, I gotta go take a drink. And, I know from working the program and staying close here, I just in October celebrated 10 years of sobriety here. Nice. And so that doesn't mean, again, we're not saints. I have had some moments, and I get cranky when I don't eat, and ask her, hungry, angry, lonely, tired, one of those things will set me off, if I live another million years, I couldn't begin to pay back what this program has given to me, and working the program and all of my affairs, starting the day, setting everything off right, and I know as long as I continue to do the next right thing and don't let my will get in the way, then I continue to keep doing this. As long as I stay out of Christopher's will and do my higher power's will, the day goes more smoothly. And I can tell when the day's not quite going right, that it's like, oh my God, I forgot to pray. And especially when we go on vacation or something and where I'm out of my normal routine, it's one of those things that I forget. And so it's like, I very quickly like to stop, take a minute, take a breath, say the serenity prayer, say my prayer, and then keep going. And so I know from that, like, I can restart the day at any point. And just coming in here, doing the work, getting a sponsor, that I would say, don't let your ego get in the way. If somebody's messing with you in here and they're joking about it and they're hitting home on something, like, you have to have tough skin to stick around here. People are going to joke. They're going to mess with you. Like, you can't take people. So what is it? Rule 62. Don't take yourself too damn seriously. I try to stick to that, where life's not that serious. Life is okay. Like, it's all good. And so I try and take that attitude everywhere I go, that, and learn from Mr. Happy Joyce and Free to be happy, joyous, and free. So I like to thank you guys for having me, and very much appreciate it.
Right on, man. Let's give Chris another round of applause, man.